You are back in the zone, live from the Fury Electric Studios on the Buzz Radio Network and online at 1037thebuzz.com.
Auburn goes to work, first and 10 at the Missouri 13-yard line. Straight ahead, Mason to the 10, breaks a tackle to the 5, he's in! You may put this one on ice!
Oh, Auburn, how do you do it? I have no idea. Welcome back in the zone, Justin Akre, Phil Elson, Matty T. Join now on the Sticky's Rock and Roll Chicken Shack hotline. Keeping this thing hot this morning. Barrett Salee on a special appearance. He's going to be tied up Wednesday. Not literally, I assume, but he's going to join us now instead. So, Barrett, welcome back. How are you?
Oh, doing good. Just getting ready to brave the elements in New York City. I don't like snow, and apparently it's snowing there, so this will be an interesting week.
What are you doing out there?
We're shooting all of our BCS preview videos, and I'm getting a whole bunch of National Signing Day content in the can. And then maybe, possibly, depending on if we have time, doing some Heisman stuff too.
Bleacher Report, it's the place to be. BleacherReport.com. So you, yep. I assume you went to the championship game this weekend?
I did. It was a little less hectic than the game I saw the previous weekend. Hectic in terms of how it ended, but good Lord, it was like watching a tennis match, just like back and forth. My head, my neck hurt after that game just from having to go back and forth and watch these teams run up and down the field.
Okay, so a couple of things. First of all, we're all still scratching our heads. How does this happen? How does a team run the ball like that against a team that came in ranked 14th in rushing defense? And oh, by the way, we saw the stat this morning. They dropped to 47th in the country in rush defense after that game. Isn't that hilarious?
So it's amazing.
So the decision by Missouri to go with a three-man front versus their outstanding four-man front and the way they decided to try to defense the Auburn running game will be talked about for an extended period of time, I'm sure, and it's something that I'm sure Pink will have some regrets about. But what did you see and what was the talk after the game about their approach defensively?
Well, they kept giving Auburn the edge, which is surprising. I think, you know, the three-man front, I think, was designed to get a linebacker out to stop the edge, but they just couldn't do it. You know, Jay Prosh was fantastic. Brett Renden-Fulce was fantastic setting that edge. And so, you know, Trey Mason, I think, you know, he even said it after the game. He was even surprised at how big the holes were because he'd round the corner and there'd be nobody there. And so it obviously didn't work. I think it was a mistake on Missouri's part to try to approach it that way. They thought that Trey Mason between the tackles was more dangerous than Trey Mason on the edge. That was not the way to approach it. So, it's one of those things where I think Auburn right now just honestly doesn't even care, you know, what the defense does, because their offense is set up in a way where, you know, they get to the line of scrimmage and they have basically three options. It's like a triple option out of the shotgun. And, you know, a defense just by nature is going to have to leave one of them open. You know, that there's just going to be one option open, and Nick Marshall has done a fantastic job recognizing that and you know, implementing that option on every single play, whatever it may be.
The rushing numbers, the total numbers are both just ridiculous, 545 on the ground, 677 total. But again, an Auburn defense that allowed over 530 yards to Missouri, and Missouri obviously doing it in a little more balanced fashion, 300 through the air, 231 on the ground. We keep waiting for that defense to catch up to Auburn, and it doesn't seem to happen.
No, it really doesn't. And I think I wrote this in my piece about what we learned in the SEC championship game. You know, defense doesn't win championships anymore. Just enough defense wins championships, and that's sort of a moving target based on the team and the scheme. And right now, you know, Auburn has just enough defense. You know, you look at what they've been able to do. Yeah, they gave up, you know, 42 points to Missouri. They didn't give up any points to Missouri in the fourth quarter, and that's not an aberration. That's a trend. That's what Auburn does. They're 21st nationally in fourth quarter scoring. They're giving up just 4.8 points per quarter in the fourth quarter. I mean, that's just enough defense. That's what they've, you know, won with. And I think you look at Auburn and say, yeah, they don't play defense. Well, they do play defense. They buckle down when they need to, and they get after the quarterback with four. And they did that to James Franklin. Now, granted, James Franklin, a couple of drives, and I went back to watch it, you know, yesterday, a couple of drives, James Franklin was just getting harassed and still making great throws. Now, sometimes that happens, but, you know, Auburn was still getting pressure with four. So, you know, it's a good philosophy. It works. You know, I think, and considering the way college football and football in general is moving towards more of an offensive scheme, dominated sport, you know, getting just enough defense is all you need, and Auburn certainly has got that.
So again, the numbers, it kills me. Here's something that was interesting too. Talk about efficiency. James Franklin throws for over 300 yards. He throws for 3 touchdowns. He threw 37 passes and completed 21 of them.
Yeah.
His quarterback rating is 53, right, for that game. Nick Marshall throws 11 passes, completes 9 of them, throws 8 touchdowns. His quarterback rating, 88. So significantly higher than James Franklin's. And again, we continually say, how can you win when you don't throw the ball? And they continually find a way to do it. And when they do it, it's devastating.
It really is. I mean, the touchdown pass, the Marshall Sammy Coates touchdown pass, that was one of the most unreal things. He threw off the wrong leg,
yes,
running forward into double coverage, and he literally couldn't have run it out there and given it to Sammy Coates any better. I mean, it was perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, Nick Marshall, for all the, you know, criticism he takes for being a one-dimensional quarterback, he's got the other dimension. He doesn't have to – I mean, the arm is amazing. He's got a huge arm. He's a little rusty, but, man, you know, when they call pass plays, you know, it's at the right time every single time because defenses are just lulled to sleep by this running game over and over and over again. That offense is a thing to watch, man. When it gets going, it's unreal. I mean, it really is. And the scary part about this, and I don't think people are talking about this enough, Auburn has one senior on its entire two deep on offense.
Ugh.
One senior. And, you know, Nick Marshall is the first quarterback that Gus Malzahn has ever coached that didn't go through spring practice. Plus, he was a defensive back 2 years ago. So you're talking about Nick Marshall with all of those pieces coming back and that big arm. I mean, that Auburn offense next year, holy cow, it's going to be insane.
I don't like that one bit. Are you going to go to the championship game?
I think so. I'm actually, when I'm in New York, I'm going to discuss that as well. I think I am.
Have you been to Pasadena before?
I haven't, and that's why I'm lobbying for it, because I really want to go to a game there.
Yeah.
I think, not that I, you know, want to get a free trip out of the deal, but I kind of want to get a free trip out of the deal.
Well, no, but I mean, that is one of those things that it should be on your bucket list of things to do as a sports fan, and certainly as a college football guy like you. I've been to a Rose Bowl before, and it was a horrific game. Washington destroyed Iowa in the game I went to, but that is an unbelievable experience. The stadium, we had terrible seats, and they were still great seats, if that makes any sense. It is such a fantastic place. It's hard to believe they have 100,000 people in there for the way that place is constructed. Even in the bad seats, it's a great place to watch the game. So it's a great experience, and certainly to watch Auburn out there for you know, personally, it would be a great experience for sure. I think you definitely need to go.
Yeah, you know, we were planning on trying to get me to go no matter what, no matter who got there, and you know, now that, you know, obviously an SEC team is there, that helps, and you know, being my alma mater helps too. You know, it'd be a fun experience, but you know, I think the thing about it is, you know, travel wise, it's so expensive. I mean, you know, in turn we got that big money, we can probably spend it, but they still think they're trying to figure out, you know, if I'm the right person to go out there, because I would be flying across country. And I mean, I tell you what, it was funny. I looked up flights last week, just, you know, in case whoever went. And from Saturday morning, flights to LA were from Atlanta were $200. After the SEC championship game, they were $780.
That's crazy. Like,
where did that come from?
And so, not surprising, I suppose.
No, I really hope I get to go out there and cover it, because I'd love to not just for the game, but to be out there for the entire week and the you know, press conferences and the Rose Bowl, Tournament of Roses parade and all that stuff. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Barrett Salee, BleacherReport.com, joining us on the Stickies Rock and Roll Chicken Shack Hotline. Other SEC games in bowls, what do you consider to be some of the more compelling matchups? And before you answer, I have to throw in the fact that we are all, I guess, disappointed that they didn't put what we thought was obvious, Ohio State against Alabama in the Sugar Bowl would have been a lot of fun, but so be it. But as far as the SEC matchups go, what do you like?
Yeah, Ohio State, Alabama would have been great. Oregon, Alabama would have been great also.
Yeah.
I kind of like, Texas A&M and Duke, because I know Duke isn't a big draw, but New Year's Eve, Johnny Manziel, stage all to himself in Atlanta, his final game as a college quarterback, we all assume, against a Duke team that's a nice little story, one of the, you know, biggest turnarounds this year in college football. The fact that A&M doesn't play defense, I think, will lend itself to a close game no matter who they play.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that will be a lot of fun. I'm sort of interested in the LSU Iowa game. You know, with those two teams, the way they operate. You know, big boy football. I think that'll be fun. Other than that, you know, a lot of the SEC games I think are a little bit, weak. Wisconsin, South Carolina, I don't know about that. Nebraska, Georgia, saw that last year. Didn't really care for it then. Probably won't care for it now. Alabama, Oklahoma. I mean, come on, Alabama's going to kill Oklahoma. I think for the most part, the SEC games are not going to be that exciting. Although Oklahoma State, Missouri, that'll be fun.
The Georgia game. The only interesting thing to me about that is we're going to get a look into the future. We've already gotten that in a very small dose with Murray out and to see his replacement step in and see what the future looks like a little bit, because the running backs obviously will be back and they will do some good things defensively as usual for Georgia, but the quarterback play is going to be the big question mark going in for them and a couple other of the SEC teams, including A&M, next year.
Yeah, you know, I think the Hudson Mason against Nebraska's defense, which has been sort of hit or miss, or mostly miss, you know, I think that'll have some intrigue. I really want to see Anthony Jennings against Iowa. You know, I think that'll be fun for LSU. So, you know, there are some decent ones. You know, it's football. You know, I think a lot of people complain about the bowl games. I'm all for more bowl games. You know, bring them on. But, you know, again, these games, you know, I think the BCS sort of screwed things up, you know, by not having Alabama, Oregon. I think that was one game that I think really, or Ohio State, Alabama, Ohio State, either one. That was one game that I think really, could have happened and didn't happen. And I think that's sort of, you know, had this domino effect throughout the entire bowl structure.
Barrett, for years I sat here and passionately complained about the BCS. I passionately complained about, why don't they have a playoff like everybody else does, at least a four-game playoff. And now that they have it, I'm thinking, gee, you know, this year of the BCS, the way it's arranged without semifinal games, it's probably better the way it is right now as opposed to a playoff. But the thing that is now my new soapbox item is the layoff between the final game and the championship game. And it's something everybody has looked at and said, well, that's an issue. That's unfortunate. There is nothing else like it in sport. It is not good for competition. It's not fair to the fans or the players or the coaches or anybody else. It is a huge negative. I hope it's something they will fix going forward, but at this point, there is no plan for that because the semifinal game apparently is going to be the first of the year in 2015 for the first playoff. I would love to see them wait a couple of weeks and then play the first semifinal games and then take a couple more weeks before the championship games. Does that bother you as much as it does me? Because to me, that is the most glaring issue with college football today now.
I think it bothers me, sir. I think your last point, maybe taking 2 weeks off, playing some semifinals, and then taking 2 weeks off and playing a national championship, I think that'd be perfect because, you know, it would give coaches a chance to really dig into the game plan. It would give, you know, fans a time to reset and figure out travel arrangements and something more than a week. And it would allow teams to, you know, keep that momentum going, too. I mean, you look at Auburn right now, I don't think anybody wants to face Auburn. But with a month to prepare, you know, I think, you know, any defensive coordinator can at least come up with something to slow them down. So, I think, I would change that. I do like that the national championship and the 14 playoff will be a week after, because that is, to me, you know, a lot of the reason why Alabama has been so elite is because Nick Saban is so good with time to prepare. You know, he's not going to have that luxury. I think you'll get a truer sense of who's good and who's not, you know, in the national championship game. But again, you know, I think getting back to your previous point about the BCS, I've been the biggest BCS proponent ever. I think that it's the best postseason format in American sports. I love it. And I think it got it right this year. I think a 14 playoff this year would have been a little harder to figure out, to be honest with you, because who do you put in that four spot? Alabama? You put in Michigan State, the Big Ten champs? You put in Baylor? I don't think any of those teams earned a national championship based on how the season played out. Did, you know, Alabama earn it over Auburn or Florida State? No. You know, I don't. Did Baylor? No. I think, you know, it's clear that they got it right this year, and I think, you know, next year there's more of a chance of a team that's not necessarily totally worthy winning a title, and that's bad.
Yeah, this is totally a minor point. It doesn't matter because neither one's going to a title game, no matter what, and neither one is, really has anything to cry about, I guess. But I was shocked, I guess, that Stanford ended up fifth in the BCS standings ahead of both Baylor and Ohio State. And Baylor finished strong. I mean, they had a very dominating performance. Of course, it took them a half to get going, but they dominated. And I was surprised, as a one-loss team, they ended up behind Stanford, which lost two games, admittedly with a great strength of schedule and a very good overall conference look in the Pac-12. But I was just surprised that Baylor ended up behind them.
Yeah, and one of those losses was Utah. So I
right,
would too.
Exactly.
I would too. Now, granted, Baylor really doesn't have a huge leg to stand on because it got boat raced by Oklahoma State. But I agree. I thought that was surprising too. I think that tells you just how much computers not only influence the BCS standings, but influence the voters that are deciding in the Harris poll and the coaches poll as well.
Interesting stuff. Enjoy your week, my friend. Hope everything goes well for you travel-wise, and I mean not only this week, but also with the championship game, and we'll talk to you before then, certainly, but hopefully they come through on that for you.
Absolutely. I think it's going to happen, which would be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks
right.
for having me.
All right, appreciate it. Thanks. That's Barrett Salee, BleacherReport.com, and certainly a lot to watch for on Bleacher Report the next couple of weeks. It's going to be a busy, busy period of time here as they start breaking down these games, and of course they do NFL and the other sports, college basketball as well, so they will be covered up.
I didn't take Barrett to task on a couple of the things.